reflects a consistent pattern, really, on the part of the Obama administration in terms of, you know, kind of too big to jail, too big to prosecute. These banks have basically gotten off very lightly with fines that they can easily pass along to customers.
Well, I want to ask you about that. The same day as the HSBC news, the New York Times ran a story about how the DOJ is pushing Wall Street banks to plead guilty on price manipulation. Guilty pleas, the paper said, would be, quote, likely to carry a symbolic stigma if limited actual fallout, close quote. Well, I mean, what the heck? No doubt many a mugger would love to be sentenced to symbolic stigma, you know, but we don't play it like that.
Yeah, in the 1980s, you know, we had the SNL crisis, and a lot of savings and loans around the country failed. And President Bush I actually prosecuted more than 3,000 such banks, and 880 bankers actually went to jail. They did real jail time. This time around, there's been no bankers virtually at the senior level going to jail at all. And this financial crisis of 2008 was, you know, 70 times the size of the SNL crisis. So I think they get the idea that they can simply sort of pass these costs off to their shareholders. And also the fines come a whole lot later in the process. So if, you know, a lot of the penalties, like in the HSBC case that we're talking about now, are referring back to behavior that was 2006, 2007, you know, it takes years for the fines and penalties to be levied, and the profits from the activity, you know, were all realized in the first few years of this decade. So, you know, on a cash flow basis, this is a profitable activity. The bankers aren't going to jail, and, you know, the fines are paid late.
Well, the New York Times finally talks about this as the latest embarrassment for HSBC, and there have been reporters doing excellent work on this, but I sort of feel that the overall media approach to too big to fail is not commensurate, should we say, to the severity of the crime and the impact of it. What's your general feeling about media?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a good salacious story. We get names of well-known actors and politicians, and, you know, the King of Morocco having an account at HSBC. I mean, that's all juicy stuff. The story lasts about a week, and then it goes away until we have another such revelation. The big point about this is that, first of all, the litigation approach to fixing this problem has not worked. You know, we had all these fines and they just don't do the job. Secondly, this is an industry problem. It's not just HSBC as one bank that's engaged on this on their own. You know, UBS and Credit Suisse and JP Morgan and Citibank. The United States Justice Department has gone after a couple of the big Swiss banks when they were helping wealthy Americans take money abroad, but you know, wealthy Americans are putting money elsewhere, and then all of Latin America is putting their money here. So this is a kind of a global issue that has to do with tax justice. And, you know, basically the wealthiest people on the planet, I think, have been allowed to get away with this systematic tax avoidance enabled by the world's largest banks. That's the story, not just one bank or, you know, one dictator.
We've been speaking with journalist James Henry of Columbia University's Center for Sustainable International Investment and the Tax Justice Network. Thank you very much, James Henry, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Quite welcome.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find them on FAIR's website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Kelly Spivey. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
It is 6:03, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. After a few announcements, we'll be listening to Bread and Roses. Stay tuned.
One, two, ready, go!
Tune in to KBOO Monday, April 27th through Friday, May 2nd from noon to 4, and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd from noon to 5 p.m. to hear our live broadcast from the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, brought to you by our friends and colleagues at WWOZ in New Orleans. We'll have access to 5 stages of fantastic traditional and contemporary New Orleans jazz and blues, brass bands, in interviews and commentary by the best that WWOZ has to offer. That's the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival starting Monday, April 27th. The weekdays will broadcast it from noon to 4 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd, will broadcast the festival from noon to 5 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 6th Annual Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon on Sunday, April 25th at 4 p.m. at Interstate Lanes in Portland. 12 registered bowl-a-thon teams will be bowling to raise funds for the Network for Reproductive Options Abortion Fund to help make reproductive rights a reality for those who can't afford to pay for an abortion. Again, that's the Abortion Access Bowl-a-thon, Saturday, April 25th. 4 to 6 p.m. at Interstate Lanes, 6049 North Interstate in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We bowl away our daily cares with little strikes.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city, their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry too.
Hello and welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm Adrienne.
And I'm Ashley. We are a feminist news and public affairs collective here on KBOO every Friday night at 6 p.m. Tonight we are so excited to host a discussion about healthy relationships and how parents can foster open communication with teenagers about sex, relationships, and other important things happening in their lives. We're going to be joined by a mother and daughter who've been through it all and are here to tell us how they remained so close.
A little bit later, we are going to hear about the upcoming second annual Healthy Breakup Summit that is happening tomorrow at Portland State University Native Student Center from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Yes, we're excited to hear and host the organizers of that event. Youth and adults alike are in the house tonight to tell us about it. But first, we're going to go to this interview with our mother and daughter. And I want to tell you a little bit later, we're going to be able to get Al Vernacchio, who's a nationally recognized sexuality educator, speaker, and author. And he teaches at a school in Pennsylvania about all sorts of different themes, and he's quite popular. There's been a TED Talk about him and an article in the Times, so we're excited to have him on a little bit later. But first, we want to welcome to the studio tonight Marshalia and Mary. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being here, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Yay. So we wanted to just open it up and kind of start off by, if you could give our audience a little idea of your relationship. And, you know, I guess I had the privilege of a few weeks ago hearing Marshalia in a kind of casual setting, kind of talking about her mom and her relationship with her mom and everything that she's taught her. And being a mother myself of two little girls, I got really excited about hearing how this close relationship had developed between a mom and a teenage daughter, because I don't know about our listeners out there, but for me and many of us, our personal experiences have been somewhat the opposite when we are teenagers with our own moms. So Mary, let's just start with you. And can you tell us a little bit about your daughter and an overview of your relationship with her?
Well, my daughter is a lot like me. I think that's probably one of the reasons why we get along so well. We've had a pretty strong relationship ever since she was little, after I had my son. I don't know. She's great. I love her to death. She's everything that I wanted to be when I was younger and wasn't able to do. So here's the future version of me. This is my daughter. So.
Nice. Marshalia, tell us, tell our listeners how old you are and a little bit about yourself, if you can.
I'm 17. I attend Roosevelt High School as a senior. And I work for Food Works. It's a produce farm on Savvy's Island, so I've been working there for about 5 years. So, yeah, that's a little bit of background on me. And my relationship with my mom, it's great. I love her. I mean, obviously, everyone goes through struggles with parents and with just people in life. But I think overall, I'd have to say that my mom's been my backbone. For me, and I think I've kind of been that for her as well, and I look up to her as a role model, and I mean, I just make sure I tell her I love her every day, just because you never know. So she's great. She's the best mom. I couldn't ask for anything different or anything more or less, because she's taught me what she knows, and I just trust her. So
nice. And so in her teaching you what you know, what would you say about what you've learned as far as lessons on healthy communication or respect? What have you learned from your mom?
Well, I didn't really think I learned anything from my mom until I got into different situations where I was like, holy cow, she was right. And I think she's taught me respect a lot over the years, and just because she's my mom, obviously I respect her, but because she's an adult, she's always taught me that I need to respect my elders. And I think that has helped me a lot, because I come in conflict with a lot of adults sometimes at school or in the work field, and I have to remember they're an adult and I need to step back and stay in a child's place, as she would say.
Well, talk about that a little bit. Like, what I think that sometimes there's this adultism, I don't know if you've heard that term, that happens. And, you know, from a perspective, a lot of times we don't hear the perspective of the teenager or the young person about what that feels like. So I'm just curious if you could talk about that for a minute.
For me, when my mom would say that to me, or, you know, like my aunt would say it to me, I would look at them and in my head I would think, well, that's kind of hard for me, because I've always kind of been raised a little bit harder, you know, being the only girl in the family, having brothers, and being around kids. To me, I kind of felt like I grew up fast and I had a lot of responsibilities at a really young age. So I always thought, like, can I stay in a kid, like a child's spot? And as I got older, I realized I am still a child, and I have those, sometimes I have those childish moments where then I remember, like, okay, this is what my mom's talking about. This is what my aunt's talking about. I know being younger, I was always like trying to climb on men and stuff, and that's when I needed to stay in a child's spot. And looking back on that now, I understand what she meant by that. And I mean, it just comes in different scenarios in life. I can't really give any particular moment, but I know when to stay in my spot and when it's okay for me to step outside of my shoes and say, hey, like, this isn't right, or I don't appreciate that. So,
I mean, to me, I think you're wise beyond your years, so that's what we're hearing tonight. But Mary, would you add anything to that about ways that you've kind of encouraged respectful communication with Marshalia when it comes to working with adults or throughout her life?
I think, you know, when I was young, I didn't have respect for my elders or authority or anything like that. And, you know, as I grew up, I realized, you know, maybe I should have. So I tried to teach my kids that you need to respect everybody. Everybody, nobody is better than anybody. And we all have a story to tell. And you need to respect people for who they are and their story that they tell. You know, to us it may seem one way, but to others it impacts their lives in a certain way. And we have to respect that. And as her mother, you know, I open the lines of communication with my children because I believe that that's how it should be. I don't want my children to look at me and think that I'm a liar or that I'm hiding things from them, because that's not fair. How am I going to teach them things if I hide it from them? Mm-hmm. So I try to be as open as I can with her and tell her about my experiences. And in doing that, I hope that she will grow up with the morals and the respect that I would like her to have for people in general. Just anybody in general. It doesn't even have to be her mom or her grandma. It's just anybody. Mm-hmm. You know.
I think hearing you talk makes me kind of laugh at the way that society perceives like the talk. Yeah. Like you sit down and have the talk about sex, and it's like it's a process. Is what you're saying?
It's really not, though.
It's really not a process. You know. In my opinion, the more open you can be with your children, the better. You know, there's nothing embarrassing about the talk or sex to your children. There's nothing embarrassing about it while you were making them.
Right.
So why should it be embarrassing to tell them about it? You know what I mean? You don't want them making one like you did when I was 15 getting pregnant. So hopefully that rub off. But
so with that, just as far as you growing up, not respecting your elders, what helped to shape you? What happened within you in the process that you said, I need to change now with my kids, that I would teach it in this way, that you would want to make sure that they knew you weren't lying, that you were transparent? What helped to shape that in you?
A lot of different life experiences, and meeting and getting to know a lot of different types of people and the way that they are in their everyday lives. And in the different things that I've gone on or have gone on in my life, I've decided to take out certain parts of each situation and look at it in a positive light and say, okay, well, you know, this happened, but this is how I'm going to teach my kids for it not to happen this time with them, you know. And I give them that openness that my parents didn't give to me, you know, and I tell them straight up, there's no, you know, hiding around the bush or beating around the bush trying to get to the point. You just tell them and you let them know, and you let them know straight up, and they're going to look at you and they're going to respect you more for doing that and showing them the way than from hiding it from them. So
do you get embarrassed asking your mom's questions anymore?
Oh no. I mean, when I was like my little brother's age, he's 13, when I was around that age, yeah, it was a little embarrassing because I was like just getting into middle school, you know, getting into sex ed and stuff like that. So it was a little embarrassing. But now I come home and if I got a question, I'm like, hey, Ma, can you help me with that? Or can you teach me this or whatever it is? I mean, she's always wanted me to be open about anything, no matter what it is. And
parents always want their kids to be open with them. We could tell our kids all day long, I want you to tell me what goes on in your life.
Yeah.
But let's keep it real. Teenagers don't do that. They don't go to their parents because they, you know, they feel some kind of way, or they don't want their parents to get, they don't want to be in trouble or whatever the situation may be. But I've always told my kids, it doesn't matter what it is. I don't care what it is. You can come to me and talk to me. And the way I got them to actually be able to do that is to be in their life in other aspects of their life also. I'm really involved in the school, I'm involved in their futures, I'm involved with just about any aspect of their life. And I let them be who they are. You know, they're allowed to feel the ways they feel, they're allowed to have any kind of emotion there. Everybody can be mad, anybody can be happy, it doesn't matter. I let them be individuals, and it's turned out good thus far. I keep my fingers crossed.
She's an impressive young lady.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Also, and I just think it's really interesting what you shared with me earlier about dating relationships. And, you know, that's what this show is about. We're talking about healthy relationships and respect. And we're, if you're just tuning in, this is Bread and Roses. And tonight we're featuring youth that are involved in organizing and putting on the Healthy Breakup Summit that's happening tomorrow from 11 to 3 at PSU Native Student Center. Marshalia is one of the youth, and she's on tonight with her mother, talking about some of the things that have gotten to her to the place where she is today, which is a lot about the coaching and values based education that her mom has put into place since she was a wee one. So yeah, I guess one thing I'm very curious about is how you came to this philosophy around dating and relationships. Can you share with our listeners what you shared with me earlier?
Well,
your rules.
As my daughter looks funny at me. I'm a single mom, and, you know, I try to let my kids know that it's me and them against the world. You know what I mean? And that's how I teach them. It's us against the world. And so being a single mom, I have taught my daughter that she needs to find boys that are respectful. They have to have certain qualities. You don't want somebody who's, you know, talking bad to you all the time, or, you know, there's just different things that you want in a relationship. And all her boyfriends must meet me. And if they cannot come to meet me, you don't need to be with them. No. It's just that simple.
So it's not just about meeting her. I think they have to ask for permission to date her.
Yeah, yes, they do.
They do. It's an old-fashioned thing, but I feel like if a young man would like to date my daughter, then as a young man, he comes to the parent or parents and respectfully introduces himself and, you know, asks if it's okay. You know, I think that that's something that's really important. I really do. You know, I don't want my daughter just hanging out with just anybody and then come to find out. She comes home, she got a black eye, she's mad or whatever. I don't want that happening. So I got to make sure that I meet these boys.
Yeah.
They got to pass my test.
Uh-huh. So. And I bet all of them have risen to the occasion.
Not all of them.
I think, not all of them.
The strong ones do.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Very good.
That's great. Do you have any words of advice? I mean, you've spoken a lot about kind of your philosophy about parenting, but there's parents out there that might feel disconnected from their teenagers. Do you have any words of advice for them about kind of reinvigorating that relationship or helping their children know they care?
Well, first and foremost, you cannot judge your children for the things that they do, right or wrong. Everybody makes mistakes, and everybody has pleasures in their life. So everything happens for a reason, and you can't discourage your children by, you know, telling them what they're doing is wrong or whatever. You just kind of have to guide them and show them that this isn't the path that you want to take. So I say listen to your kids, you know, talk to them, ask them questions. They're going to get annoyed. It doesn't matter. It shows them that you care and that you want to know what's going on with them, and you want them to feel comfortable talking to you about things, anything. It doesn't have to be just sex, anything. Mm-hmm. And if you can get that conversation going about just any kind of topic, then it'll make it a whole lot easier to transition into talking about more serious topics with your kids. You know, you shouldn't be embarrassed to talk about things with your children. That's how we end up with, you know, the teenage pregnancies and the violence and the things like that, by our parents, us, not talking to our kids. They're our future, and we need to tell them what's going to happen if they don't, you know, at least take some regard for themselves. So
Marshallia, as we're hearing how your mom has raised you, your values, what have your friends said? The fact that you have to have a guy come to ask for permission to date you, the fact that you have such an open relationship with your mom that you can talk to her about anything. What have your friends said?
Actually, my friends wish they had my mom a lot of the time. A lot of my friends come over and they realized how relaxed and they would say chill my mom is. And they see our relationship, and they see how funny we can be together, and they see the seriousness in our relationship. And they also see the openness that we have. And a lot of the times they leave and say, wow, you know, I wish I had that with my mom. And in a sense, it makes me sad, because I wish that everyone could have that relationship that I have with my mom. But then it also makes me happy to know that my mom's doing something right. You know, I know she's doing something right, but it feels good to know that my friends feel safe around her, and they feel like they can go to her with anything. And so I mean, I just, if any teenagers are listening, I would just say, like, be open to your parents. I mean, it may be hard and it may be
scary.
Yeah, scary at first, but I mean, they're your parents, and even though they may be mad, my mom always says, like, I'll always love you. And I believe that from any parent, you know, like, that's your child. And to the parents, like, you just need to listen, and to the child, like, you just need to speak up, because your voice will be heard, and, like, they'll always love you at the end of the day. I mean,
you make me think of the age-old adage of the fact that it takes a village to raise a child, and that even if that child doesn't have a parent they can go to, there's someone else, say in your mom, Mary, that if they do have questions, they feel safe enough. One thing that Mary has said, because I've had conversations with her outside of this, is first she's your mom and then she's your friend. So she makes sure to have that distinction. And I can say my father tells me that very same thing. So it's nice, the fact that we have a person who can be there as our parent and an authoritarian, but also to say, you know what, I'm also your friend.
I tell you, you shouldn't be friends with your kids to be a parent, but, you know, I believe you should be a parent first, but you should always be friends with your kids. Always. Me and my daughter are best friends. She's my road dog. She's my backbone.
There you go.
That's how it goes.
This is great. It's been really inspirational. And I think I might have to take some lessons for you, since my kids are really young, and I hope to have this someday. So if you're, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Bread and Roses. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to be back with the organizers of the Healthy Breakup Summit to talk a little bit about that. That's happening tomorrow. So next, we're going to an Oglala Lakota band from Pine Ridge called Scatter Their Own, and this song is called Forever Endeavors.
Sweetest kiss upon your cheek, and she brings you to the tree. Smell the cedar and the breeze. With your smiling eyes, you heal all the lies. I swell with love and delight as we circle up in the sky. Answer your brave cry. Oh, she looks back at me with those pretty brown eyes. Oh, she doesn't have to tell me. I feel those pretty brown eyes. Everything is simplified. Forever's and ever's. As I take you to the water, we begin to see I'm made for you, you're made for me, and now spirits start to dance. Everything just makes sense. Ecstatic that we took this chance. As you feel my breath upon your neck, our bodies agree this is everything. Thank you.
welcome back to Bread and Roses. Tonight we are hosting a show about a discussion about healthy relationships and how parents can foster open communication with teenagers about sex, relationships, and other important things in their life. We are very excited to be here tonight with the organizers of the Healthy Breakup Summit. And before we get into the conversation, I wanted to tell you that the song you were just hearing was Forever Endeavors from an Ogallala Lakota band called Scatter Their Own. And I had the privilege of hearing them play earlier this week when they came to play a show at NAIA for our youth and our Early College Academy, which is another hat that I hold. I work at NAIA. So they're completely self-taught, and they didn't even have music classes at their school. And they're just a really lovely couple that care a lot about each other. And I thought it was very fitting to play them on this show. And they also have an awesome woman bass player. So check them out. They're called Scatter Their Own. So we're going to switch gears. We just had a conversation with a mother and daughter talking about their relationship with each other and their open communication. We're going to switch gears now, and we're going to talk about the second annual Healthy Breakup Summit that's happening tomorrow from 11 to 3 at PSU at the Native Student Center.
Yes, we are. And we're going to be discussing now how we can foster healthy communication and respect for our young people. And we are joined in studio with members of the Step to Respect team at the Native American Youth and Family Center. Welcome all. So we have Brighton, Isaac, Jordan, and Lainey from NAIA. Why don't you introduce yourselves to our listeners?
Hi, I'm Lainey.
Hi, I'm Isaac.
Hi, this is Brighton. I'm the Youth Empowerment Coordinator at NAIA, and I have the pleasure of working with Lainey and Isaac and working with Jordan.
Hi, I'm Jordan. I'm the Teen Dating Violence Awareness Analyst at NAIA as well, and Lainey and Isaac are some of our youth leaders for the Step to Respect program.
Thank you all for joining us this evening. We also have Marshalia, who we just spoke with her mom, Mary. She is a youth who has been working on this subject and this project, so welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes. Can one of you please start us off with an overview about what is happening at the Healthy Breakup Summit tomorrow?
All right. Well, it is our second... It is our second annual Healthy Breakup Summit, and tomorrow we're going to have a couple of interactive workshops for middle school and high school youth. We will have some raffles for some fun prizes. Lunch will be available. It will be at PSU at the Native American Student and Community Center. Registration starts at 10:45. But it starts from at 11 to I think around 3. Yeah.
Okay.
So, if you have any middle school or high school youth, definitely come on out. It's going to be a good time.
Nice. What are some of the workshops that will be done tomorrow?
So we have Unica coming out. And they're going to be talking about comparing media images. And we'll also have social media relationship conversation and another workshop called Not a Scene on TV. So that'll cover, you know, TV it usually is more fairy tale and might not be as realistic as what happens in real life. So we'll talk about that, and then That's Not Okay. We'll cover consent and NAIA Safe Space Alliance. We'll talk about gay and lesbian relationships and creating a safe space where everyone can feel comfortable without being judged.
Very nice. So I'm curious, you know, back when I was a teenager, we didn't even have cell phones, we didn't have Facebook, Twitter, all of that social media at all. So what do you think are the most difficult aspects to navigate when breaking up? Any of you?
I feel like it's harder nowadays, and it makes it really complicated because with social media out there, it's just like there's a lot of influence in the media, and so it makes it, and like with your peers and stuff like that, like it makes it harder. Like if you've been in a relationship with somebody for a long time and you try to like break up with them, a lot of time your friends will like guilt trip you, like, but you guys look so happy together and like you're so sweet and cute and like what are you doing wrong that just make everything all messed up, and like it makes it a lot harder to just keep everybody else out of your business. Like it makes it everybody's relationship instead of just you and your partner or whatever. I think it makes it really difficult.
Have you ever had a friend or the experience of people just wanting to like unplug from all social media because of that?
Yeah, I feel like it happens a lot of the time when people are either trying to go through a breakup or going through a breakup. They will a lot of the times like delete their Facebook, shut their phones off, and just like, yeah, I'm gonna just cut all of you off because I'm already dealing with all this emotional stress. I don't need you to add on top of it, and it makes it pretty hard. But
yeah.
Yeah. Does anybody else have anything else to add to that?
No, I think she hit it on the spot. all I would say is don't break up over Facebook or texting. Like, do it face-to-face because, yeah.
Well, it's that as well as airing what's happening, whether you're happy, whether you're sad, or kind of the issues that are going on. So you're having your argument, if you would, over mm-hmm. Facebook.
Right. And then everybody else's input. And like she said, it just creates something more than what it is.
What about like something that kind of freaks me out is the need to kind of keep tabs of on each other through like Facebook, or like where you're checking in and who your friends are posting pictures of you and stuff. Does that ever freak you out?
We actually talked about that a lot in the group because it's like, what's checking in and like what's stalking? Like, where does stalking come in? Like, how do you tell the difference between all of that, you know, like, is he just concerned or is she just concerned, or are they like keeping such close tabs on you to the point where it's kind of becoming uncomfortable and stuff mm-hmm. like that? Like, yeah. It's very big, especially with social media, because it's like, you know, you can never really, it's harder to tell because it's like, oh, I was just, you know, seeing if they had made this post or that post or whatever. But then again, it's like, if you're checking in all the time, it's kind of like, you really don't have that privacy. And yeah, you can be like, well, don't put it on social media, but at other times it's kind of like, it's just the fact of, why are you keeping those tabs on me and checking up on me so often and mm-hmm. stuff.
So Brighton and Jordan, my understanding of the Step to Respect project at NAIA is that it has a heavy focus on dating violence prevention. So talk about how you focus on educating youth about these issues and about oppression and stalking and all these different things that you do. Tell us what it's about.
So the STEP program that we run, so the program is called STEP to Respect, and STEP stands for Services, Trainings, Education, and Policies. And this is all about teen dating violence, stalking, sexual assault, and domestic violence, and ending that for the youth in our community and for the entire community, because it really affects everyone. And we work at a school that is largely a Native population. Not everybody's Native, but I would say about 95% are of color. And it's really important to really talk about intergenerational violence and intergenerational trauma when talking about teen dating violence. It's not just something that pops up and happens today to someone. You know, there's usually a storyline that goes from, you know, generations, that's passed down from mother or from father to child, unfortunately. So it's something that we try to do is really talk about it. We really try to have restorative justice conversations, discussions, where Jordan and I don't try to come to them as like we're the experts, but knowing that they, the students, such as Lainey and Isaac and Marshalia here, are the experts in their own lives, right?
Yeah, because we deal with youth, we try and make it entertaining. So we throw events throughout the year. We teach curriculum that is interactive and fun and where they can speak amongst themselves and we're not lecturing to them the whole time. You know, I feel like that's works better for youth, for our youth, and I'm sure Lainey and Isaac can testify to that. But yeah, this year was pretty successful. We had curriculum where we talked about consent. We watched a little mini web series called The Halls, which encompassed everything from teen dating violence to stalking to it really did also talk about double standards as well. So you know, it didn't make the male the victim a lot of the time in this documentary. You know, women are victims of violence as well. So we covered a lot of range, a lot of variety topics, and yeah, it's been a good year so far.
Well, I'm curious, with what you've already done in helping to engage youth on this issue and this subject, what kind of feedback have you received from them when you actually do get to engage them in this conversation?
That's a great question. You know, and that's something that is difficult about the work that we do, right? You can always put a time limit on the work that we do, but this is ongoing work forever. And the, you know, we always hear back so many different things, you know. We were talking to Lainey and Isaac earlier because they are our leaders. Like, we train them to be leaders in our community so that other youth can speak with them and learn about resources and learn correct ways to deal with the red flags that they see. But, you know, I think that a lot of, a lot of the students that we deal with, sometimes they're like, this is great, and this is really speaking to me. And then other times students may not really be feeling what we have to say that day. And that's okay too, though, to be honest. You know, we have to meet them where they're at.
Right. And like what Marshalia and Mary were talking about earlier, it's harder for youth to come to adults and talk about their problems. You know what I mean? So when we do have these discussions in class, sometimes they're willing to talk about what's going on, and sometimes they're not as open, you know, but we always have a safe space for them if they ever need to come to us in person, alone. Sometimes they don't like speaking in front of their peers. And we also do surveys at the end of our curricula to see, you know, how it's going, if they are feeling like it's working, you know. Through the relationships that we've developed personally with our students, we have been getting some pretty good feedback about what we do. They really encourage games and interactive conversations, like I was saying earlier. But yeah, Lainey and Isaac.
Yeah, what's been... Has there been anything that's been like your favorite activity that they've done or anything that's really hit home for you?
My favorite activity would probably be in their shoes. It's when you get a little card that has a story about a person and their situation, and you go step by step and making decisions on your own, like if it was happening to you. And then at the end, it would tell you everything that happened to them, like if they died, if whatever, you know?
I feel like that was my favorite thing too, and that was really, it really moves you because you're like, you know, you always think like, oh no, that's not gonna happen to me, or no, whatever, but like going through it, it's kind of like, you kind of get scared to, like, what you're going to choose. You have to, like, really think about, because it gives you options. Like, if it's telling you, like, do you want to, you know, go home, or do you want to go get, try to find resources or whatever, you know what I mean? And then it's like you're thinking, like, if I make this wrong choice, like, what's going to happen, you know? And it kind of really does put you in their shoes, and it puts that kind of, like, pressure on you, and it makes you realize that it really does happen and that it can be scary, and sometimes you'll feel alone and like you don't know where to go. And that's why we love the group, is because it teaches us the resources and like how we can get help and knowing the signs and helping other people once we learn it and being able to spread the knowledge. But it really does, like, in the end, like when you read the final like the outcome of your decisions and stuff, like it's kind of like, well, could I have changed that? And it makes you kind of want to play it again, like I'm gonna go do it again and change everything and, you know, see the outcome then. And it really does like make you in their shoes.
And this is based on true stories, correct?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So I did do this, and I think what that also shows is the systematic oppression, because, you know, when you're in their shoes, they actually do what is suggested to them. They go to the, you know, whether it's an organization, and then they get turned around and you have to go back. And so even looking at, no matter what you choose, sometimes just the system in and of itself creates the oppression. So that is a very valuable, I think, you know, exercise to go through.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not, even if you think you have choices, maybe they're not real choices, or they're not choices you would want to make, right? And I think the other really cool thing about that activity you were just describing is that it helps all of us when we're looking at people that are in these situations, it helps us not blame them for being there, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
What other kind of activities have you guys done? You can think about
art and poetry.
Yeah, contest. We have a lot of contests and stuff like that. Like, it's really fun. Sometimes we have like just like kind of trust exercises and like the art and poetry contest, though, that's always really fun because you see everybody's because they tell you, like, this is about healthy relationships and stuff like that. You can do a poem, you can do a picture, you can do a song, you can do whatever, and you kind of see, like, everybody's perspective on, like, what a healthy relationship is, mm-hmm. like, what that is to them. Like, some people did poems about their moms, some people did poems about, like, their boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever, you know, pictures that were just, like, out of this world. It's mm-hmm. it's always cool to see what somebody else's perspective is on what's healthy to them.
So with that, I'm curious, because obviously there's healthy and then there's unhealthy. Can you give some examples of what healthy looks like and then what some examples of unhealthy, you know, some whether red flags, etc.?
Well, to me, a healthy relationship is always communicating, you know, no one's above someone else.
Mm-hmm. Do it. Good example.
I feel like having... like, we learn, like, you know, having that trust and stuff, like, being more communicating, like he said, being able to just express yourself, not having to try and be somebody who you're not, you know, just being comfortable and happy with that person. I feel like happiness is a big part of it, because if you're in a relationship and you're never happy and you're always crying, or if you're, you know, being... if you're having like an abusive relationship or whatever it is, that's never healthy for somebody. Like, I feel like if you're happy, you know, and you're both happy, like not just one, but it goes both ways. You guys are happy together. You make each other happy. I feel like that's healthy.
Do you have anything to add to that?
I don't really want to share too much, because tomorrow when I go, I'm going to be talking about signs of unhealthy and healthy relationships between spouses or partners, friends, and then really emphasizing how important it is to communicate with your mother or your parents. So I don't want to say too much, but I think communicating is a huge one, and trusting each other as well. You know, you have to have that trust and that communication and being open with one another, because if you're not open, you don't know what the other person is thinking or feeling. So,
what about boundaries?
Yes. Actually, that's one of the things I'm going to hit on tomorrow, is milestones and boundaries. Not rushing those, and really being respectful of other people's boundaries. You know, if they say they have a limit, then that's what that means. And no means no. Mm-hmm. Like my teacher says, no does not mean yes. No does not mean maybe. No means no. And I believe that you can say that firmly, but kindly. If someone really cares about you, they'll listen to what you have to say, and they'll listen to you and respect you with any of those boundaries or with anything that you guys are doing together.
Yeah, boundaries equal values, I think, in a lot of ways. Yes. So, yeah, it's being firm to your values. That's great. So that was a little tease for what Ms. Marshalia is going to be doing tomorrow at the Healthy Breakup Summit. She's leading a workshop. Before we jump into more about the Healthy Breakup Summit, I am curious about what you've learned in this program, and Brighton and Jordan, too, you can share about what you've learned about supporting friends who might be in these types of...
Well, I've learned a lot about supporting friends, because I've even been involved in some situations where I've seen, like, a girl being messed up to my friend, and I'm just like, whoa, I stepped in right there. And, of course, I get into the mess and get myself 30.
So basically you don't believe that you can stand back and be an innocent bystander anymore. It sounds like you're an active...
No, you can't. Step you gotta up. Say something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we always have that step up, step back thing, kind of, you know, like, there's always a time where you can just, like, maybe don't get into somebody's relationship, because, you know, it's not your relationship, so you don't want to, like, get in the middle of it. But then again, there's those times where it's like, no, you need to step up, because this is not right. So you should feel it's your place to say something, as, like, this is your friend or family or whoever, like, or even if this just isn't right, you don't treat somebody that way. It's not nice. Like, yeah.
So I am very appreciative that we have Isaac in studio tonight, because you're not here, but he's surrounded by all women. So it's nice to have that male perspective and male voice. I'm curious, what do you think about the roles of men or boys in this issue?
Well, I know in class a lot of the boys were a lot more quieter because it was a room full of girls. But yeah, I feel like boys need to just open out more. Like, talk about their feelings more. Even though men are supposed to be strong and whatever, it's not really like that. Like, I feel like if you can really express how you feel, then you're a man. You know, that's, you're strong.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have anything to add to that about how this this work that you've been doing has combated gender violence or gender inequality, you know, within the youth that you're working with, or?
Well, like what Isaac was saying, I feel like the guys are a little reserved when it comes to expressing their feelings, but I feel like Brighton and I do a good job in not putting them in the spotlight as far as them being the abuser, and so we also emphasize that women can be abusive as well. Like Isaac was saying, he had witnessed his friend being abused by his girlfriend. So just making them feel comfortable, you know, we're not attacking you guys at all. And in doing that, they are a little more willing to speak up. And we do provide open spaces for men to speak to, for the boys to speak to staff members of the who are male to get advice in case they don't feel comfortable talking to Brighton and I. But yeah.
And how do you get young men to examine privilege just in general in society and sexism and things like that?
So something that we do a lot at NAIA is that we start talking about race a lot of the times, because a lot of young people especially can really get the feeling of like, yes, I'm discriminated against, right? Based on my color of my skin, based on my background, my culture, my language. And then, you know, going from that point and then starting to talk about, oh, and there's also other kinds of oppression, you know, and there's other kinds of privilege, you know, and that, do you know that your maleness, you know, gives you privilege above this person who's seen as female or taken as a woman or a girl? And so starting from that point, where a lot of our students can really understand power and oppression and what that feels like, and then being able to extrapolate on that and be like, and it's also in gender. And I always think that it's important to talk about things that students can really connect with first. And so like talking about race and class sometimes can be a really good starting place. And then also really just giving students the ability to not get it at first, you know? We've been talking over and over today about non-judgment, you know, providing youth a place to not have judgment and keep things confidential and let students just talk, let people talk, you know? And so allowing that non-judgment can really get people to a place where they can start making realizations for themselves. And so we're not forcing anything on them, you know? Which I hope that we've been doing over the years.
You did a great job.
Yeah. And exposing and encouraging this type of thinking on a deeper level at the high school level is great. I mean, it's like exactly when I think it needs to happen. So it's very
Definitely.
Exciting. What do you think is the most surprising thing that you've learned from youth about these issues and about this work?
So I've been doing this work for about 3 years, and Jordan's also been doing this kind of different work for some time also. And, you know, I can't help but think about one of the youth that we actually, that walked from this planet, you know, from Earth this weekend, which was just Alex Cooper. And she was a student that went to NAIA, and that was when one of our youth empowerment groups. And I have learned so much about bravery and courage and greatness from my students. And I will never forget that. I take that wherever I go. And when I'm afraid, I think of my students who are just fearless sometimes, you know, and I'm like, would they stand up? They would stand up. I'm going to stand up too. So I've learned, you know, a lot about courage from them.
I have to say the same thing. Just knowing that a lot of our students have been through a lot and, you know, a lot of traumatic things and at home, all those things, it kind of humbles me, because I might not have gone through everything that they've been through, but it is definitely humbling to see them still fighting through whatever they've been through, you know, and knowing that they can find comfort in Brighton and I if they ever need it. It's... I've definitely enjoyed my time working with the youth this past year, and I definitely have seen progression in all the students and have built really great relationships with the students as well, and I hope to still be able to connect with them later on.
Nice. So as you're talking about how the students have helped you, whether encouraged you, showed you how you can be courageous just as they are, how active are the youth in your programs in guiding your programming and curriculum?
They definitely have a huge voice on how our curriculum is made, for sure, because last year it was a lot of, worksheet-based and lecture-type information where we wanted to educate them, because, education is key to seeing change and improvements in the community, but it's also important that they're absorbing the information but enjoying it at the same time so that they can easily retain it, So the transition from last year to this year has changed a lot, and it has changed through their input, So like I had said, we provide surveys at the end of our curricula to see what we should change and what we should keep. And I feel like that has had an impact on what we teach.
I think that's honestly like one of the best parts is the fact that they'll tell us like, what do you think? Like, what do you like this? Should we keep it? Should we toss it? Like, what do you think? And they actually listen to us, and it's more like they actually give us stuff that connects with us, and is they give us reality on situations. It's not some like something that's like textbook, like, and it's just boring and you're reading it and you're just like, oh my goodness, like, when are we done? Like, can this be over? But it's actually stuff that you want to get involved with, and you're like, whoa, dude, I did not know that. Like, Can you tell me more? Like, I'm actually kind of interested in this. Like, I thought this was going to be boring, but what's up? This is pretty interesting. And it's like, it's stuff you can relate to. It's stuff that you, even if you can't relate to it, maybe like 10 days later, you come into a situation and you're like, dude, I just learned about this. Like, and this is how, nope, I'm not going to react like how I would have before, but I'm going to do this now because I know I can do this. And it is like my right to do this. And you gain so much knowledge from it, but that it's stuff that really you can really relate to and use in your life every day.
It's really inspiring. And if you're out there listening and you have young people in your life, teenagers, let's hear more about the Healthy Breakup Summit and who should come and where it's at.
Middle school and high school youth, yes, please come. It will be on PSU's campus at the Native American Student and Community Center. We will have workshops provided. We will have interactive games and conversations regarding relationships. You do not have to be in a relationship to come. You do not have to be in a relationship where you want to break up with somebody to come. Come with your partner if you want to, if you are in a relationship. But for the single folks, we're just going to have a good time. And if you do plan on being in a relationship later on, this will be useful. We will be providing lunch for you, and a couple of fun raffles. We'll have like a little photo booth and hashtag HBS2015. And yes, you can also check us out on Facebook as well, which is the HBS Summit 2015. So yeah, come on out. It'll be a good time on a rainy day. The sun's not out, so you ain't got nothing else to do. So come out. Have a good time with us.
And Mary, Marshalia's mom, wants to...
I just want to say something real quick. For all of us parents out there, keep this in mind. Our children's future is in our hands. And if we don't teach our children the right way, there's not going to be a future for anybody. Mm-hmm. So
thank you so much for saying that. And I think parents out there might be going, ooh, I want to go. I want to learn. And I think even adults might be saying, ooh, I've had some really bad breakups. I want to go. I want to learn.
Right.
This is not for you. This is for youth. So we just want to make that very clear.
Stay home.
Yeah. This is middle school and high school youth. Please send them. There will be bus tickets available and food and all sorts of great things for them. So that's a Healthy Breakup Summit tomorrow from 11 to 3 at PSU Native Student Center, which is at 710 Southwest Jackson. Mm-hmm. And you've been listening to Bread and Roses. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Adrian.
We want to thank our guests for tonight. We had Lainey, Isaac, Brighton, Jordan, Marshalia, and Mary. We had a full house in the studio tonight, and we want to thank our engineer, Chris. Stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio, and have a great night.
at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun did